This is Deborah Beck, professor of ancient Greek literature in the Department of Classics at the University of Texas at Austin. My students and I are excited to welcome you to our podcast, Musings in Greek Literature. Welcome to the final episode of Musings from Greek 365, a podcast series created by the students in an advanced Greek course on Homer's Iliad at the University of Texas at Austin. I'm Deborah Beck, the course instructor. Our class podcast features 8 episodes, plus this retrospective conclusion. Each episode features a member of our class talking about a particular passage from the Iliad that they were responsible for teaching to the whole class. The students also reflect on their individual experiences with talking about the Iliad, both with one another in class and with you all in this podcast. Our series assumes a general familiarity with the plot of the Iliad and with Homeric Greek, but each episode also provides a bit of background and context for the specific passage that it talks about. The organization of the series follows the sequence of the Iliad, but each episode is designed to be freestanding. As it turned out, the podcasts did not go live in the same order as the individual Iliad passages on which they are focusing, so we have proven by experience that each episode can be listened to either on its own or in the numbered sequence that begins with episode 1 and ends with episode 8. I created the first episode in the series, and since Homeric poetry so often uses ring composition to create unity and meaning, it seems fitting that I should conclude our podcast with a brief reflection on the entire project. Ring composition, as many of our listeners will already know, is a way of creating structure in an oral poem. The ring is created by the repetition of a compositional element in such a way as to create a frame around whatever is in between the two repetitions. This can happen on a relatively small scale, as with the nearly homophonic Greek words that most commonly introduce and conclude an extended simile. It can also occur on a much larger scale. For example, both Book 1 and Book 24 of the Iliad highlight the theme of a powerful, grief-stricken elderly father who supplicates a hostile Greek warrior to return his captured child to him. Book 1 begins when the priest Chryses supplicates Agamemnon and the Greeks to return his daughter Chryseis. Although the rest of the Greeks want to return her, Agamemnon's refusal leads to the events of the Iliad. It indirectly causes the deaths of Patroclus and of Hector, and after the end of the poem, the death of Achilles himself. In Book 24, the supplicant father is Priam, who asks Achilles to return the corpse of his son Hector, so that Hector may be mourned and buried by his fellow Trojans. Until Priam's speech, no one has been able to reach Achilles in his terrible grief for the dead Patroclus. But Priam's appeal to Achilles to remember his own father Peleus succeeds where everyone else had failed. In part because of this thematic ring composition between Book 1 and Book 24, the theme of the bonds of emotion that connect parents and children plays a central role in the Iliad. There's a special place in my heart for teaching the Iliad in Greek to undergraduates because that is where my own career as a classicist began. I first encountered the Iliad in translation as a first semester college student, and it was not a success. It seemed to me that the entire poem was one long battle featuring an endless series of gruesome wounds incurred by warriors whose names I often could neither remember nor pronounce. I was mystified. Why was this great art? Why did anyone still read this? 3 years later, I read Book 24 of the Iliad in Greek in a required literature survey class in which we used the commentary by the wonderful Colin McLeod. Suddenly, the whole poem changed before my eyes. I was transfixed by the bravery and the pathos of Priam's actions in traveling by night alone to the Greek camp to try to retrieve his beloved son from someone he must hate more than anyone in the world. I was filled with admiration for the artistic vision that saw the Trojans and the Greeks as equally deserving of the audience's sympathy and attention, even though the Trojans are notionally the enemy for a Greek audience. And it became clear to me that if the audience does not weep for the death of Hector, which several of my students have told me that they did, And if the audience does not feel the mourning and the grief of Priam, then the Iliad fails. The poem is not about war, I found, so much as it is about the sorrow and loss that war causes for everyone involved. I then wrote a senior thesis about the family values that lie at the heart of the Iliad, which I enjoyed so much that the experience ultimately led to my decision to return to graduate school to become a professional classicist. Reading the Iliad was a kind of ring composition for my college years. And so, whenever I teach the Iliad to undergraduates, I remember my own college journey from total Iliad skeptic to lifelong fan. During our time together in class, I hope that some of my students may set off on that very same journey. Podcasting turned out to be both way more fun and a lot more work than I had anticipated. As you can hear in the students' individual episodes, the experience of creating a podcast was very educational for each of them. Organizing their thoughts into a podcast helped them to solidify and sometimes also to clarify what they had already learned from teaching a particular passage from the Iliad to their fellow students. It also taught them a lot about learning and about teaching. From the comments that the individual students made at the end of their podcasts, it's clear that podcasting requires students to think about and to organize what they know in a way that teaches them things that more conventional written assignments simply do not. They and I, as well, have welcomed the challenge of offering detailed and sometimes fairly technical readings of ancient Greek in an easily accessible style that suits the oral podcasting format. When you write a paper, or when you are teaching a class that is 75 minutes long and you are in the same room with your students, the format can prevent you from noticing that what you have said is boring or unclear or entertaining but not very useful. On the other hand, when you only have 12 minutes or so and you're beaming out your remarks to complete strangers over the internet, you have to think through every word you say. We have all found this to be great practice for being clear and concise, which, as my students know, are two of my favorite words of praise for effective analysis. Because of the many benefits that everyone in the class got from podcasting, very much including me as the instructor, I plan to include a podcasting assignment in my next undergraduate Greek class, which will be in the fall of 2019. The main change I expect to make is to allow more time to make the podcasts. When I designed the assignment, I conceived of the time needed to make a podcast as comparable to an extra demanding oral report, but that turned out to be wrong. Rather, the students told me that it was more like writing a short paper. So, when we do podcasts next fall, there will be more time in the syllabus to make the podcasts. There will probably also be more detailed guidelines for the students to help them break down the assignment into manageable sized tasks, but I'm still working on that part. If you enjoyed this series and you would like more information about the instructional materials I developed for it, please do get in touch with me at the University of Texas at Austin Department of Classics. And if you would like more ancient Greek podcasting, please join my Sophocles class in the fall of 2019. I'm Deborah Beck. My students and I thank you very much for spending time with Greek 365 to muse on the Iliad. If you enjoyed our podcast, please leave a comment, and we hope to see you next fall to talk about Sophocles.